Greetings and salutations, and welcome to the third installment of the 100 Pockets Records podcast. My name is Kurt Stein, and I'll be your host. Next to me is Luke Lorbecki.
Yes, indeedy.
And he's not wearing a shirt again.
Shirtless. I once went 4 days shirtless. Think about that. Wrap your mind around that for a moment.
I think there's a lot of people around the world who go shirtless.
In America?
Down south.
Wisconsin?
Or at Sawdust Days in Oshkosh during the 4th of July celebration.
You may have a point there.
There's some shirtless people down there. Speaking of Oshkosh, we're podcasting from live. Podcasting recorded live from lovely Oshkosh, Wisconsin, while the headquarters of 100 Pockets Records remains in Brooklyn, New York. You could call this the Midwest satellite. Pay no attention to my panting pit bull Sherman as he chases rabbits on the couch next to us. But this podcast is going to be centered around, as we discussed, creativity, not working for the man, being self-employed, all those awesome punk rock ideals that were instilled in us at a young age that we chased hard. We chased hard.
Still chasing.
And it's good to go to the source to figure some of these things out. So this podcast is going to be with Bruce Campbell, the famous yet infamous yet not famous at all Bruce Campbell from the Evil Dead movies, who he and his one of his very good friends Sam Raimi, who you may have heard of, the director Sam Raimi. I don't know if anyone's heard of him.
not ringing any bells.
Yeah, exactly. But they started out with nothing and made the movie Evil Dead, which is of course a cult classic and one of the coolest movies ever made as far as independent horror goes. And if you've never read the book, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor, have you read that, Luke?
I haven't.
Oh, Luke's working on a horror movie, an independent horror movie right now, and I suggest that you and anyone else interested in getting into making your own movies, and especially along the horror genre, read Bruce's book, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor, because it breaks down the entire movie industry, how to get your stuff made, how to knock on doors when you don't have any money, how to generate money.
Oh, I'm loaded, though. Rich man like me has got no problem with any of that.
Well, when you don't buy shirts, you save a lot of money. Clothing gets expensive. Something that's been coming up a lot in discussion, you know, because I'm definitely at a finding myself again phase in my life, and maybe this podcast is some kind of therapy that's going to help me do that. But I've come up with a new term, I think. Cocooning. I've been cocooning lately.
Cocooning.
I'm not sure exactly what that means.
It means you're about to become a butterfly.
Or a moth. In my case, a dirty old moth that's going to fly out of that cocoon towards the nearest flame it can find. And, as its wings are scorched or it gets shocked to death, I'll just say, why me? No, but cocooning, I think you, like, you know, if I were some kind of pupa in a cocoon, you know, filled with my own food and shit, you know, to condense around you for a while to try to come out with a better version of yourself, maybe grow these wings you're talking about, these beautiful butterfly wings.
Or moth wings, also beautiful.
Or moth wings. And I think a big shout out should be given to Mothra because of his independent attitude as a giant Japanese supervillain who... No,
nobody did it for Mothra. He did it for himself.
Well, and he has that crazy dust he shakes off of his wings. That's not much of a power. I mean, I think it would be fairly easy to shoot down a moth, but that's just for me. So when I emerge from my cocoon, I really hope that I'm as successful as Mothra.
It smells like old
maybe
food.
Maybe it should be called Mothraing.
Smells like old food and shit in here.
Yeah, it smells like old food and shit in here. And then you try to come out of that and make yourself into something greater than you are. Another thing I'd like to bring up is I think, you know, we live in Wisconsin and we just had a very interesting recall election go down. you know, the state's kind of divided 50-50 on a lot of things, and it's really weird to see Wisconsin going in that direction. But I think some people's morals are just completely divided. And knowing that, I've been coming up with some interesting questions that I've been... I teach music, like I said, you know, I teach music, play gigs, do a bunch of things like that. But kids are the best people to pull when it comes to, like, trying to get the pulse of what's going on in the way people are thinking, I think. They hear things from their parents and from school and from whatnot. But I have this very conservative student who I call Tiny Rove because he's a skinny little guy and he kind of looks like Karl Rove. I call him Tiny Rove. But he and his brother take lessons together. Tiny Rove plays guitar and his brother plays bass. His brother's more of an independent, but Tiny Rove is definitely a conservative. Their parents are...
Is his brother regular size?
They're both kind of small.
Okay.
But you know, the older one's beefier than Tiny Rove, definitely.
That comes with age.
Yeah, that does come with age. But Tiny Rove is definitely conservative. And, you know, I don't think the kid's ever worked a day in his life, but he definitely has some opinions about, you know, how money should be shared around and things like that. So I like to ask he and his brother moral questions. The kid's parents are divided. Mom's a teacher. Dad's self-employed. You know, they have conflicting views on this whole thing. So a question I came up with that I've been polling some of my students with is, if you were in an alley, and I had three things. I had a giant steel-toed boot, like a size 13 or bigger, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I've got $1 million in cash,
okay? All right.
And a baby, okay? Cute little baby, okay? Now, if you put this big steel-toed boot on and you kick that baby as hard as you can in the head, I'll give you that $1 million.
All right.
All right, now let me clarify a few things before I get kind of any kind of answer from you. All right, first of all, the boot will fit no matter what your foot size is. People ask that. I like that.
Conveniently a size 13.
Good, me too. That's nice. It's a good number.
Hey, can I borrow some shoes?
No, your feet stink.
All right.
You
can borrow my sandals.
I won't wear your sandals.
All right.
But okay, so the steel-toed boot will fit you. There's $1 million in cash, untraceable money.
Okay.
But it's $1 million. I mean, like, $1 million is, nowadays, is... It's still a very large amount of money, but people could hope to maybe earn $1 million in their lifetime. You wouldn't maybe be set for life. You know what I mean? If you invested it properly and lived meagerly, you could probably never have to work again.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But it still is. It's not $1 billion.
Right.
It's $1 million.
Yeah.
And now, okay, so the boot will fit. It's $1 million, untraceable, but it's $1 million.
Okay.
The baby... A lot of people have questions about the baby. You have no clue who the parents are. You have no clue anything about the baby. You don't know anything at all. It's just a cute little baby sitting there, okay?
All right.
Now, what I want you to do is put that steel-toed boot on, kick that baby as hard as in the head as you can, and I'll give you that $1 million. Now, here's what's going to happen. When you kick that baby, the baby is going to just disappear. It's just going to disappear like the Wicked Witch of the West melting, okay? Just gonna little swaddling clothes just dip down in the alley, okay?
Okay.
You don't know who the parents are. You're gonna have no legal ramifications for kicking this infant in the head, okay?
All right.
And all you're gonna have to live with is the... You won't even know if it's dead. All you'll know is that you kicked a baby in the head and I gave you $1 million. Would you do it?
If it was your baby?
No! It's an unknown baby. Why did I go through this 2-minute explanation? No, see, this is the kind of thing people try to pull on me. No, it's not my baby. It's nobody's baby. You have no connection and you're not allowed to know.
And the boot isn't magical in any way.
No, the boot is not magical. It's just heavy. It's got a real nice...
Sure.
It's maybe a guy working in some kind of wire or welding factory was wearing it.
Some sort of fabrication boot.
Yeah, they're like, you know when the steel toe gets exposed?
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay.
Would you do it?
No, I wouldn't kick this baby.
Good, you're a smart man. However, Tiny Rove,
yeah,
an eighth grader,
uh-huh,
definitely would kick that baby in the head for $1 million. No question about it whatsoever. His brother found this question to be really interesting because he couldn't fathom doing it either, because just living with the guilt of kicking this infant in the head for the rest of, to have money for the rest of your life, maybe, maybe not, didn't appeal to him. But he's been asking a bunch of kids at school, and it turns out, as he polled about 20 of his friends, about 18 of them said they would do it.
How old is he?
He's going to be a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
So, well, a lot of his friends would definitely do it. No questions asked.
They would all kick a baby.
In the head.
For $1 million.
Yeah. And I'd like to know what you would do. So please write me at Kurt@100PocketsRecords.com and tell me if you would kick a baby in the head for $1 million with a steel-toed boot. Let me know. Also, it'd be nice to know what other people you might want to hear us interview to talk about creativity, the creative process, and things along those lines. Because that's what this podcast is supposed to be all about. Let me dig out my tape here really quick so I can get the proper date for this interview. No, that's not the one. Yeah, no, those are cassette tapes. Anyone know the sound of that? Those are cassette tapes.
What do those do?
Well, you put them on this thing with two little holes, and then it spins them around. All right.
Sounds like witchcraft.
We're going to get into this interview with Bruce Campbell. This is from September of 2003. And Bruce talks about this about the time his movie Bubba Hotep was coming out, which if nobody's seen Bubba Hotep, I really suggest you do. As Bruce calls it, it's a redemptive mummy Elvis picture where Bruce Campbell plays a Elvis Presley who has penis cancer and is still alive in a nursing home. And he teams up with Ossie Davis, who's
JFK,
an old black man who thinks he's JFK. And there's a mummy that's killing people in the nursing home, and they've got to solve it. Elvis and JFK together. I really suggest you check the movie out. But Bruce gets into a lot of industry questions that I ask him about how to get stuff made, and he says the same thing about, you know, maybe he's like, there's a lot of money to be made at commercials and things along those lines. And maybe, like Ira Glass said, that, you know, you got to find the right thing for your creative outlet. At the end of this podcast, as always, we'll be featuring a track from one of our 100 Pockets Records releases. This one is going to be Ian Hoffman's song Mistrial from his Dome Swan EP on 100 Pockets Records. I think you should check it out. Ian's one of those amazing melody and lyric writers that only comes along once in a while. He's got that kind of Mark Bolan thing from T-Rex. That's kind of what it sounds like to me. Serious. What are you chuckling at? It does have a very T-Rexy vibe. But yeah, stick around after the podcast or after the interview and take a listen. So without further ado, here is my interview with Bruce Campbell from Fever Pitch Magazine from September of 2003. Part 3 in the Lost Fever Pitch Tape series on the 100 Pockets Records podcast. Check it.
Hello?
Bruce?
Yeah.
Hey, Kurt Stein from Fever Pitch. How you doing?
Doing fine. Doing fine. Hold on one second, can you?
No problem.
Hey there, how you doing?
Fantastic. Sorry I didn't get back to you until just now. I've been having a crazy morning.
That's fine.
Some people I know are breaking the Guinness Book of World Records for the world's longest drum roll right now.
Okay.
And I had to go.
I pity them.
Yeah, I had to go cover that 12 hours of constant drum roll.
Okay, so now do you want to? Shall we do this?
Yeah, sure. This is fine with me. Is it? You got a little time?
I do.
Excellent.
Well, I got about 20 minutes.
Cool. I just want to thank you for taking the time out to do this. I've been a big fan of yours for years, and you were somebody I really wanted to hook up with the magazine. I want to make sure you get a copy of the last issue and the one that you're going to be in too, so you can check it out and see what you think.
Alrighty.
Alright, first of all, you got some new projects coming out. You got Bubba Hotep coming out pretty soon, right?
Right, it's opening, finally.
It's opening, when did you make that movie? How long ago?
2 years ago. It's been done for a year, and we've been sort of shopping it around, and finally, through the Landmark theaters, it's going to hit a bunch of the major markets between pretty much starting mid-September.
Who wrote and directed that movie, and how did you get involved with it?
Don Coscarelli adapted it from a Joe Lansdale novella. John Coscarelli did the Phantasm movies, and the writer Joe Lansdale is quite a popular cult writer out of Texas. And Don Coscarelli got his hands on it and liked it and optioned the script, and then got into a conversation with Sam Raimi about 3 years ago. and said, hey, I'm looking for someone to do an older Elvis. Who do you think you'd do it? And Sam just said, just call Bruce. And so Don contacted me back in, like, the year 2000, and I read it, and it was a very strange script, of course. But I thought, well, let me know when you have the financing, because he didn't have it put together yet.
Oh, okay.
So about a year later, he put it together, and we picked a date and did it.
Can you tell me a little bit about the movie?
It's basically a redemptive Elvis mummy picture. It's a 68-year-old Elvis Presley who's still alive in an East Texas rest home, who's dying from cancer, and he meets another guy at the rest home, played by the actor Ossie Davis, who thinks he's Jack Kennedy, and so the two of them team up to kick a mummy's ass that's sneaking into the rest home and sucking the souls out of the old people. So Elvis and Jack Kennedy they team up to kick the mummy's ass and save the rest home.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's going to be hitting some major theaters pretty soon?
Yeah, it's not a wide release. You'll have to look for it. But you can always go to the Bubba Hotep website.
Okay. Yeah, I've checked out the trailer a couple times. Fantastic.
It's all there. Every theater and every screening is there, so that's the best place to check for screenings.
Cool. Do you have any other projects you're working on right now, movie-wise?
Yeah, I'm going to go start next week on a film called The Woods for MGM. It's a horror film.
What's that about?
Oh, it's a creepy kind of sort of a mental mind game movie with woods that come alive and things like that. So it's pretty scary.
Who's doing that movie?
The director's a guy named Lucky McKee, and beyond that, I don't know who's in it.
Gotcha. I did read if Chins Could Kill, and man, Bruce, it's right up there with
Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, it's right up there with Gone with the Wind. I was thinking more like Lenny Bruce's How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. Like, it was one of those books that just, like, man, I couldn't put down the whole time I was reading it. Did you expect it to do as well as it did?
You can only hope. We just hope to make sure that we sold a certain amount, but it did better than we thought.
I heard rumors you might be working on another book.
Yeah, I just finished the first draft of a book called Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. It's due out next year.
Oh, fantastic. And then along the same lines?
No, it's not autobiographical. This is a fiction comedy book.
Oh, my God. I'm excited. What's that about?
You'll have to read it and find out.
All right. I like that. It was really weird, too, because I had a dream. I had kind of this waking dream when I was thinking about what I'm going to do when I interview you and stuff. And we've got some really good artists who work for our company who we try to use a couple of still frames and whatnot for inside the article. But we always try to have like a featured artist do a picture of something. And at the time I was reading of Chins Could Kill, and I had this vision of having my friend Brian Frank, who's a phenomenal illustrator, do this picture of you sitting in a chair working on your memoirs with the chainsaw and shotgun up on the wall and everything else. And as I get to the back of the book,
there it is.
I mean, like, that was totally premonition there. Who did that? It says Campbell on the bottom. I was wondering if that was a relative.
Yeah,
or
it's an artist. I believe it's J. Scott Campbell, something like that.
Okay, I gotcha. So do you have any, what advice do you have for people trying to bust into the music or into the movie business?
Read my book.
Read your book? It's the be-all and tell-all of...
Well, no, it's just I think people need a realistic evaluation of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very easy to get suckered into the hype and glamour of the entertainment TV shows.
Right.
But not enough people get the real story that it might not be a smooth ride.
Did you always expect it was gonna work out for you? And have you ever thought about when's the last time you thought about throwing in the towel?
Oh, several times. But you know, over the course of time, you just sort of figure out how to make it work for you. So it's been fine. But it hasn't been an easy, you know.
Yeah.
It hasn't been an easy profession. There are a lot of professions you could pick. It would be a lot easier than the film business.
And I've the first few chapters about talking about how you guys came up with the money for Evil Dead and stuff like that has been super beneficial for us, man, because we're trying to get this magazine and record label off the ground and just searching out financial resources and searching out distribution and things like that are a game that, I mean, I went to school for music, recording, and media business, and I mean, I took tons of business classes on how the industry works and stuff, and I shit you not, I learned more from your book than I did from taking all these classes.
Good.
You know?
Well, here's the other thing too that people need to realize: there's really no magic to it. That if you want to get a movie made, there are actually very logical steps you can do to get it made. You just have to follow these practical steps and be willing to take, you know, 3 to 10 years. I just sponsored a guy's film that came out on DVD a couple of months ago that took him, oh, it was shot in the summer of 05. So that's 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I think people just need to realize that you can do it. You can bust into the industry. It's not impossible, but it's not going to be without a tremendous amount of hard work and possibly heartache.
And time. You can't just expect
sure.
it to blow up overnight. I mean, some people do
and
get
it,
lucky.
And if it does happen to you overnight, you're going to regret it later anyway, because you aren't going to be ready for it. So, because there's a whole there are two completely different aspects. One is making a film, the other is or being an actor, the other is being like a movie star. There are two different approaches and two different skills. There are some actors who are terrible at being movie stars, meaning they don't give interviews, they don't go anywhere, they just work. And there are some actors who aren't that good of actors, but they're great at being a movie star. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like hobnobbing and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, they're good. They're in every magazine, they're in every photo, they're at every opening, they're jet-setting around the world. They're great at being a movie star. And there are some actors, you never see them. You only see them in the movies. And
yeah.
then you never see them anywhere else, which I kind of prefer the latter, where you just go, okay, that's this actor who I know and I like, and I don't give a shit how many times they've been married or illegitimate children. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true.
I really
true.
Don't. Basically, I don't.
Because that's not important. Their work is what the important thing should focus
that's
on.
That's my feeling, you know. Anyway.
Did you... What's your most the most fun you've ever had working on a film?
I haven't finished yet, so I don't have the answer to that.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
You know, most filmmaking is not hilarious. It's basically a long, hard day. You're usually working 12 long hours, pretty nonstop, kind of hustle. So there's a lot of gallows humor, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean there's a lot of trench humor where you're all in it together and you're cracking jokes and things happen on the set that you pick up as little catchphrases and you use them for 8 weeks or 10 weeks or 12 weeks together and you get really close. But beyond that set, no one would think it's funny. And
yeah.
That's basically that's how most of it transpires. Little phrases like Sam Raimi's DP is this guy Bill Pope. He's the director of photography.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a little phrase that we picked up during Army of Darkness and I just did a little bit in Spider-Man 2, which Bill Pope is shooting. And I just was walking up behind him, and I said the little phrase, and he immediately started laughing. Because he knew that only a few people would know that phrase.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
There are a lot of things that happen on the inside that only 5 or 6 people would laugh at. Hey, can you hold on a minute? I'll
sure.
be right back.
Not too bad.
Okay, where were we?
Let's see. We were talking about the Bill Pope thing on Spider-Man.
Right, so anyway, the point is there's a lot of inside stuff that no one else would pick up on.
So they're still filming Spider-Man 2 now?
No, they're just about done.
Are you you're in that movie also?
Yeah.
Who do you play in this one?
I play a guy called the Snooty Usher.
The Snooty Usher. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you you have two daughters, right?
I have a daughter and a son.
A daughter and a son. Are they also are they at the age where they're interested in film?
No. Well, my daughter wants to go into real estate, and my son's more into gymnastics than anything, so it's fine. They're just being kids right now.
Gotcha. Do you, what was I going to ask you? You did the Evil Dead video game as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that experience pretty fun? Is that something?
We did two of them so far. The second one just came out a couple months ago. Yeah, those are good experiences because, you know, you're putting on an old pair of comfortable shoes doing the character. And recording is not a difficult thing. You're not getting blood in the face. Nothing's really happening to you. You're in a pretty comfortable little studio.
Yeah.
So it's not a terrible situation.
One of my students, I promised him I would ask you this. He's an 11-year-old kid, and he worships you. He heard a rumor online that Ash might be taking on Freddy and Jason. Have you heard anything about that?
If it's not on my website,
it ain't the truth.
That's right.
All right. I'll tell him that. Do you... the fiction book you wrote, had you been working on that for a while, or was that something?
Yeah, about a year.
And how did you, had you always wanted to do kind of a fiction thing, or?
No, it came out of several ideas that were pitched to the publisher for my second book, but a lot of the ideas they passed on, and then they pitched some ideas to me, and then I passed on those, just for whatever reason, and then it sort of came around eventually to this book.
Oh, okay. So,
which is kind of it's an entertaining book with me playing me, but I'm doing fictitious things.
Okay, I gotcha. Have you had any regrets over the years of things that you wish you'd have done differently, or?
No, never.
Because I know you did go to college for a little while, right? And then decided that it just...
Yeah, I went for 6 months, yeah.
And then, but I mean, do you feel that you picked
did
up...
Did I regret not getting a college degree?
Mm-hmm.
Hell no.
Awesome.
Not the least. Look, if you want to be a doctor or a dentist, then you got to go to college. If you're in the arts, it doesn't really matter. The age and education don't really have that much impact on art, is my feeling. And so... You can be, there are actors who are incredibly educated, and there are some actors who are incredibly ignorant. It doesn't really matter. It's just, you're just applying it's more of an instinct rather than something that can be taught.
Cool. Yeah, I can totally agree with that. Do you have any, who are some people that are up and coming that you really dig their work now?
Up and coming, it's not so much that. I don't care if they're up or coming or well established.
Okay.
You know, I like guys like Johnny Depp. I think he's good. Filmmakers, I don't know, you know, you'd have to throw out a name. I don't really track guys that much. These days it takes more for me to go get a movie, to go see a movie.
Did you see the documentary The Kid Stays in the Picture yet?
No, I heard it's pretty good.
It's fantastic, about Robert Evans. I thought you'd get
right.
Very much into that. It's
right.
It seems like it's right up your alley. What do you want to accomplish? Is there any other mediums you've ever wanted to get into that you haven't gotten into yet?
We'll have to see what happens. You know, it's been fun doing sitcoms and video games and hour-long TV shows and movies and features and TV movies and plays and TV series, and so. I like just doing the whole mixed thing, so I'm sure there'll be something else that'll come up that, you know, writing a book was good. That was a new sort of experience. So I don't know. It's nice to just have a broad range of stuff that you can do.
Do you find that you're really, really busy all the time still, or do you?
That's what it seems like. I always seem like I'm busy, so I don't know.
Is your wife still doing, she does costume design, right?
Nah, she hasn't done that for a while. She did a film. She did her first documentary called Extras.
Extras?
Yeah, which is all about the people who are not allowed to speak on movies. Extras.
Is that available?
It's not. She's been doing the festival circuit with it. But so she's become a little more of a filmmaker, and then we've teamed up together we just shot 55 hours for a documentary about land use, about areas where I live out here in Oregon.
Oh, wow. What made you decide to go to out to Oregon? That's another thing I wanted to...
Well, because people don't really care about movies out here, you know. And it's, for me, it's a better standard of living, and I don't really need to live in L.A. that much anymore because they don't make as much... They don't shoot as much in L.A.
Right.
So it almost doesn't matter where you live if you're an actor.
It seems like they're shooting in Canada all the time, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, they do. So it's actually closer to me than flying from Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's very cool. Okay, do you have let's give
I
you
just a, got a few more minutes here.
Yeah, let's wrap this up. Do you for all your fans out there and people that that are really into you, because I think you're one of the actors that gets followed as not a as a how do I put this? You know, like you're Brad Pitt or James Garner or something like that. You're the people's actor, in a way. And I think that's what's brought you to the level that you're at, where it's let you float above, you know, a lot of people who have been in the same areas as you have. And do you have any advice that if you do make it, if you do begin to make it and get on your and on the right track, what are some things you should watch out for, and what are some things that you should
Be clear. No, the same things can apply from day one all the way to the end. Just be clear of what it is you want to accomplish as a filmmaker. If you want to make a lot of money, then you'll have to make a certain type of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that may or may not bring you happiness and fulfillment. If you want to be a filmmaker that has just wants to deal with issues, then maybe you should just be a documentary filmmaker. So I think you need to define what it is you want to do. If you just like music, then do music videos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of different things you can do. Not everybody has to make a feature film.
Right, right.
You know, not everybody has to get into the business in that way. Not everyone has to be Steven Spielberg. There are plenty of other expressions. Look, some guys make an excellent living directing commercials.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So... You know, go figure.
If you do have a scripted independent or like a documentary you've made or something, who are the easiest people to get them to, and how do you start shopping that around?
You just go door to door. You just look through all the industry books of where everyone's located and where their headquarters are, and you just start making phone calls.
Or you
do it through your representative.
How do you kick that door open
it's not that big of a deal. I've produced movies before, so I have a background as a filmmaker. So
mm-hmm.
you just, whatever, you have them look at it. But you don't take a documentary about land use to, you know, the Animal Channel. You know, you would just try and find the right match, whether it's Bravo or someone who shows documentaries, Discovery Channel, PBS, you know.
All right, I gotcha. All right, Bruce.
There are certain candidates. So anyway, so stay tuned for that.
All right, I will. I'll get you, if you could send me an address or P.O. box that I can get you some of the magazines at, that would be great. And the other thing I was wondering is there anywhere I can steal either some screenshots from Bubba Hotep or get some photos of you?
You can get some photos off the website, probably.
Okay, just rip them off there. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, I will do that then.
Go for it. Okay.
Thanks a lot, Bruce.
Nice talking to you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, that was enlightening.
I feel well enlightened.
Well enlightened. Thanks for being the yes man that I asked you to do. And it should also be known that all these podcasts were previously recorded by myself. Multiple takes trying to be funny on my own. Not that I'm funny now, but Luke is doing a great job holding my hand and being a face that says...
Figuratively and literally.
Just nodding and smiling. But it really helps.
You have an amazing grip.
Physically?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for tooting my hand strength. That really means a lot to me, Luke.
It's very important. In shopping for a man.
It should also be known that Luke and I are not together. We just are we are heterosexual life mates and have no problem sitting around with him shirtless most of the time.
You're welcome.
But again, I really suggest you check out Bubba Hotep. that you I suggest you check out Confessions, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. Great book by Bruce Campbell. And he's always been an interesting character and a man who's fought his way up from the bottom. And, you know, having a very good friend like Sam Raimi, who is now one of the top directors in Hollywood, who came from absolutely nothing as well, is an interesting story. Also, please don't forget to write me at Kurt, K-U-R-T, at 100pocketsrecords.com. That's 100 spelled out, not the number. Let us know what you think about people we should interview, what you think of the podcast, things we should change, if Luke should wear a shirt. And of course, please respond to the question poised at the beginning, that if I had $1 million, a steel-toed boot, and a baby infant, would you kick that baby in the head for $1 million with no legal ramifications? You would just have personal moral ramifications.
Unless you're a sophomore in high school, apparently.
No, he's fine. It's an eighth grader.
The eighth grader would
kick the eighth grader would kick the baby in the
head.
But
I thought the sophomore friends would also kick
the baby. Oh, the sophomore friends too, but I'm more concerned with Tiny Rove.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned with him. Next time on the fourth installment of the 100 Pockets podcast, we're going to have an interview I did with Chuck D from Public Enemy, who definitely was a man who changed my life and taught me a lot about things that I had no clue were going on in the world. And I don't think kids today have anything like that. I mean, when you have bands like the Dead Kennedys and Public Enemy and things like that, maybe what's the last band that had any remotely close thing? Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, Rage Against the Machine.
That was it. Nowadays, Jack Johnson really tells you how... Jack Johnson will really tell you how the world's working. He and Kanye definitely lay it down and tell you exactly how the world works.
Kanye's the only reason I'm alive and here today.
I believe that.
He saved my life.
Well... As promised, too, at the end of this podcast, you're going to get us the full version of Ian Hoffman's song Mistrial from his Dome Swan EP on 100 Pockets Records. We ask that you visit the website, www.100pocketsrecords.com. Get yourself a copy. Vinyl, digital download, support the cause. We have a lot of really interesting things coming out this summer that I'll get into more later. But... yeah, this has been fun. I'm glad you've sat around shirtless again with me, Luke.
Always a pleasure. Your pleasure.
Always my pleasure. next time, like we said, Chuck D, enjoy Mistrial, and have a lovely day. Or don't. It's entirely up to you.
To the hills of wonder, crawling down the crease of innocence, falling to the knees of weapons, travel to the creed of your respect. I'm not a hill from a blank. You know there's the flames rising from on the aims. Loosen up a snitch from gray lips. To the hall, and he made his limbs with fervor, fell with disregard for penance calls. I know the hill from the blank of sail, you know just the flame. pleasant fun.